morning, everybody. I hope you are all safe and well. So my name, for those who don't know me, Matthew Pratt, Group Chief Executive. I'm joined today by Barbara Richmond, Group Finance Director, and of course, John Tutt, our Chairman. So I'll start by summarising the highlights of today's results, and then we'll move to questions. Clearly, we're delighted to announce a strong first half performance whilst continuing to operate under strict COVID secure measures. The pandemic and return to activity has absolutely confirmed that we have the right product in the right place at the right time. Completions were 20% ahead at 3,065 homes, and we delivered a 20% increase in group revenue to £1,041 million due to our strong opening order book and resilient demand. We also achieved a pre-tax profit of £174 million, an 11% increase on last year. The performance has been driven by focusing on what we do best, which is building highly desirable, high-quality homes across England and Wales. Redrow's larger, quality family homes, located in great places with open spaces, aligned perfectly with changing customers' priority that balance work, home and the local community. At Redrow, our commitment is to create thriving communities where people want to live by building responsibly and valuing our people. During a period of intense activity to rebuild output, it's pleasing to report we have maintained high levels of customer satisfaction, and I'm grateful to our teams for their ongoing hard work and commitment during what are these challenging times. The industry has weathered a turbulent time and would benefit from greater regularity and fiscal certainty. This is essential if the industry is to deliver much needed homes for the UK. Start-stop fiscal policy and regulatory uncertainty do not assist us in the medium-term planning. We want to work in partnership with government and other industry players to come up with a thorough, sustainable plans for the future. Looking ahead, we've continued to maintain a very, very strong order book, an excellent cash position, a desirable product, and we have a resilient target market. These fundamentals mean we can look confidently to the future, fulfilling our ambition to rebuild and grow the business. Reflecting our confidence, the board is delighted to resume the dividend payment of an interim dividend of 6p. With that, I'll now take some questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you have joined us online, please use the flag icon. Our first question today comes from Will Jones from Redburn. Please go ahead when you're ready, Will.
Thank you. I've got three questions if I could, please. First, maybe just if we could explore your experience around Help to Buy and the transition. Obviously, it looks like you sold pretty well this side of the new year, but I guess any wider comments on how that's being taken regionally, I suppose, and perhaps if you could comment on what kind of portion of sales you expect it to be as you transition across to part two. The second was perhaps just if you could help us with site numbers. There is guidance in the presentation, I think, for the rest of the year, but just how you're thinking about that evolution of numbers across 22 and 23, and as best you can help us, what degree of visibility and confidence you have on the prognosis there. And then the last one, maybe just if you could help us just understand exactly around the London exit. And I think in the statement you talk about six sites, four of which have gone. Were they all, can you help us with whether they were sold or traded out, or how they went in the first half? And then the remaining two, again, how you expect to exit those? Is that a trade out or a sale? And if possible, within that, sorry, I think there's 2,500 plots left in London. How much of that is Colindale, and how much is the remaining two? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Will. So you start with Help to Buy. I think I've already said, you know, we've got a very, very strong order book, of which, you know, 750 million of that is beyond both the Help to Buy change and the stamp duty holiday, which is really showing the resilience of what our product is about. So in terms of trading, we're not seeing any difference in trading across our businesses. North, clearly we've got a completely different cap in the north, which is a lot lower than that in the south. And we're not seeing any impact with regards to the change of Help to Buy. But, you know, our product tends to be more focused on people with deposits and an element of equity. So, you know, we'd probably be one of the least affected by the changes to Help to Buy, you would imagine. So, you know, I'm not seeing any sort of changes from Help to Buy, and it's great to see, really. And we're very pleased, but I know we've been planning for it for a very long time, and, you know, it wasn't a surprise to us that this was the case.
Maybe it's too much detail, but of your sales, say, this part of the new year, do you have a rough view of how much of that is helped about at the moment?
This side of the new year?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the share of groups that is using, yeah, the share of group reservations using the new Help to Buy. It's probably too short a window to judge, but
this side of the new year, I mean, we're down about 23%, something like that. It's low, really. It's half
right,
of where
no,
it was.
Yep.
And I think in the reality is we expect it to probably be half of what it's been, if not a little bit more.
Correct. About half of historic levels is where we expect to land up. I mean, if you look at the 750 million. Order book at the end of last week, private, only 10% of that's Help to Buy.
Okay, that's great, thanks, good colour.
Okay.
Outlets?
Yeah, site numbers, we're currently running at 118, you know, we don't expect to grow that very much over the next 12 months, but clearly, you know, after that period, we expect to accelerate that forward as we hit into 2023. As we buy the land comes forward. So that's where we are with site numbers. But clearly, we've got a huge order book, which we've got to start winding down.
Yeah. On London.
Yeah.
So on London, one site was sold of the six. One site was the JV, which we've now finished. So we've recovered the last of our investment in that. But clearly, there's no turnover or anything. Two were not sales, they were just sort of exiting sites where we were preferred developers. So that's the four that's gone. The two that are yet to go, they will be in the second half, they will be sales. They're not in the plots because we're holding them for sale, Will. So what you're seeing in the plots are only the sites that we are building out, which is effectively West Drayton, Padcroft and Royal Docks plus Collindale. They're all stuff we're building.
Got you. Thank you. That's great. Very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Anastasia Solon-Tisna from UBS. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Hello, thank you for the presentation. A few questions, if I may. Firstly, I wanted to ask about collision safety and if you can give us a rough estimate of how many buildings you have which might have not used suitable cladding materials and which would be required to remove, and if there is any kind of estimate of potential exposure or provisions could be made to finance recladding and address any potential fire safety issues. And the second question, if you could give us a little bit more color on your expectations about volume recovery direction from 2021 on, when you expect to return to baseline 2019 levels, considering a stronger recovery recently in demand and intention to kind of grow organically from there and open new sites. Would you think it is achievable to return to the baseline like by 2023, 2024, or would it happen later? And the same on margins, where do you think you can get to a normalized level and what this level should be for you? Thank you.
Thank you, Anastasia. It's John Tutt. I'll deal with the cladding question. I think perhaps just to put it into perspective, you know, we've been dealing with the cladding issue now for about 3 years. In summary, if you look at the schemes where there has been issues with the EWS1 form certification, there's around about half a dozen legacy schemes where that has been raised as a problem. I think all of the schemes that we're talking about are well over 10 years old, and all of them were constructed under design and build contracts using external contractors. The issues aren't necessarily cladding and the combustibility of cladding, and there's also the question as to whether the cladding complied at the time and whether it complies now, and there's also the issue about fire stopping on some schemes as well. So it's not straightforward, it's quite complex. But as I said, we've been working on this for about 3 years with not just the contractors, but the leaseholders, the freeholders, the managing agents, and some of the schemes we have undertaken works already, and we have funded those works, despite the fact that we haven't got a legal liability to do so. And we are working to make sure that we can progress and get to a point where we think EWS1 certificates can be issued. The one thing I will say in terms of the costs, we very much, you know, will look towards our contractors to pay, but we have accumulated provisions of around about £20 million to cover these schemes over the last 3 years. So it's we're not in a position that suddenly this has come up and caused us an issue. Immediately ahead of Robert Jenrick hopefully making a sensible statement this afternoon, it's something that, as I say, we've worked at over the last 3 years. It's taken a lot of time. We worked at it behind the scenes just to make sure that we're doing the best we can for our leaseholders. So hopefully that answers your question, and perhaps I'll put it over to Barbara and Matthew for the other ones, Anastasia.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of getting some idea as to when we get back to 2019 levels, I guess for us, it's a question of whether you take 2019 with the revised group structure, i.e. with just Colindale in London, or you take 2019 in the sense of the reported numbers. If you take 2019 in the former definition of excluding anything other than Colindale, then we expect to get back to that level of turnover, which is around about just over 2 billion by 2023. If you take the absolute number, including Colindale, including the whole of London, so the actual reported 2019 turnover, then it'd be 2024 is our estimate, which has not dramatically changed, to be honest, since we reported in September and again in November. I think what we've got now is a bit clearer picture on margin progression, and I think it's fair to say we think we will be up with a gross margin of over 23%, approaching 23.5% by 2023. In terms of operating margin, I think that our overheads at that point in time will still be closer to 5% than 4.5%, so at the operating level we won't get up to 19% until probably 2024. So I think we hit normalised gross margins in 2023 and normalised operating margins in 2024.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gavin Jago from Barclays. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Just a couple of questions from me, please. The first one's just on house price inflation. I know you said you've experienced it across all regions, but if you could put any numbers on this and any kind of differences amongst the regions, I guess. And the second one's just around levels of incentives which have been used. Obviously, we've had a strong kind of wider housing market, particularly with stamp duty. Have you seen any increase in levels of incentives being used for those, I guess, reservations being taken beyond the stamp duty holiday? Thank you.
Yeah, I think HPI is pretty consistent across all our patch, with the exception of London, where we're not seeing, as expected, we're not seeing the price rises that we are seeing elsewhere. You know, as we've said in the statement, you know, we will cover the costs of the additional bill costs with our HPI. So, you know, that was in. What was the second question? Was about
incentive levels.
No, the incentive levels is staying very, very, you know, tight and flat. We're not having to do any additional incentive level beyond the Help to Buy, beyond the stamp duty, certainly stamp duty date, you know, we are maintaining a very, very strict level of incentive.
And part exchange has not been a big part of, I guess, over the last couple of years of usage anyway, has it?
We never use for part exchange, which shows you the strength in our products. You know, we don't need to use part exchange. People will sell their own. I mean, we do support people in trying to sell their homes, but we certainly don't buy them in. So we don't need to, which is because of our products, really. So it was just an identification of what, you know, what people want from our homes, that they're prepared to, you know, do the work themselves to sell it and not go down that route. So, you know, we don't use part exchange.
Okay, thanks. And can I just get a point of clarity on the cladding? So is it right, John, that it's 20 million that's been,
yeah,
I guess, provided to date across six schemes?
Which has become a little bit ahead of where the Persimmon are making a below-the-line provision.
Sure. Okay, very useful. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dan Grant from Bank of America. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Hi, good morning, and congrats on the results. Just two from my side, and one's just a clarification. The first one is just on the land market. I mean, obviously, in your statement of expecting to accelerate land acquisitions in H2, just want to understand the level of competition that you're seeing in the land market, and what sort of margin that you're purchasing in the land at. And then secondly, just in your private order book, post-March or post the end of March this year, with the 68%, was I correct in hearing that you now expect the normal run rate of Help to Buy to be around 50% of previous usage? Sorry, I just missed that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'll start with land market. I mean, we will accelerate in the second half. I've already identified, you know, there's a number of key sites that are in the strategic land bank. We've got to take note of, we've got planning already. But, you know, the next 6 months, we expect to accelerate considerably against the first half of the year. I mean, in terms of hurdle rates, we're very happy that we are achieving our hurdle rates. I think the market generally in the land market is, I wouldn't exactly say, land's always expensive, so you're not exactly sat there saying it's got a hell of a lot cheaper. It's certainly not doing that, but we're confident that we are buying sites that suit our products, so in the right location with the right planning permissions, and we're buying them at our normal hurdle rates, and that includes, you know, margin and terms of return on capital employed. So we're happy that the land market is robust at the moment, that we can operate quite successfully within it. I think over to private order book. Barbara, do you want to handle that one?
Yeah, I mean, we said the private order book was 10% Help to Buy. So I think your question was, what do we think the ongoing level of Help to Buy is going to be after the 31st of March? And, you know, we were averaging around about 30% of our legal completions were Help to Buy, and now we think that will probably drop to around 15% of our legal completions.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Bell from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, Matthew, Barbara and John. I think I've got three. First two are related, I guess. Just on the Future Homes Standard, looking ahead to 2025, what roadmap do you have from the government, and what uncertainties remain in terms of what the new standards will entail? The second question is a related one, I guess. Have you built or piloted a zero carbon home? And the third one is just a little extra colour, if you could, around the cancellation rate in the first half. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll pick up Future Homes and the zero carbon, and I think Barbara can pick up the cancellation rate. With regards to Future Homes Standards, you know, the parcel, the indication of what's happening with parcel has just been published, which will come introduced in June 2023, but clearly it's June 2023 from properties that aren't started. So, you know, it probably won't really affect completions until very much in the back end of 2024. Now, in terms of reduction in carbon usage, I think it's 30% down as to where it is. We're confident that we can deal with that. There is a cost associated to that, and we've clearly been including that within our land appraisals going forward. In terms of 2025, which will be the big change, 2025, when no fossil fuels are required, you know, we are still working our way through that. We are putting an allowance in, which is, so to say, you know, best educated guess in terms of how much we think that will cost us when we get to that point. There's a few sites that, you know, really affect in 2026 that need to start affecting. But, you know, we're working with it. We're expecting to know where we'll go from that. In terms of zero carbon homes, what we're doing at the moment is we're doing a trial of a home in one of our regions up in Yorkshire, where we're trialing infrared heating. And so we've taken the gas out. We've got two houses next door to each other, identical homes. One will have the gas heating. One will have no fossil fuels in it. We've got PVs on the roof, and we've got battery storage. And we're going to put, you know, people in those homes, and we're going to monitor mainly, you know, the bills as to what happens with the bills. And we also want to understand the comfort level of those people, you know, because infrared heating is very different to that of the normal heating. And we want to make sure that, you know, customers who are going to be moving to these homes are, you know, feel the same way in terms of moving around their homes. So, you know, we are working towards it, but that's one of many, you know, alternatives that we can use. But, you know, battery storage will become probably one of the stronger things that people use. There'll be various changes, I think, in how we heat the homes with using electric. But clearly, you know, they're trying to minimise the bills in regards to battery storage. So, you know, using the batteries at peak times and storing the batteries at off-peak times, I think, will be something that we'll be probably more focusing on going forward. So we are putting a lot of effort into that. I'm trying to not just look at the costs associated by it, but look at the effect of our customers. I think Barbara, the cancellation rate.
So you're right, John, the cancellation rate was particularly elevated in the first half of the financial year. And really, that wasn't our clients. It was generally down the chain. And, you know, the problems were around the 31st of March stamp duty holiday and whether or not deals could be completed in time for that. Also mortgage availability, which, you know, there was a period of time where mortgages of 90% or and more, but particularly around 90% were virtually went away. Those two problems have been resolved now, in the sense that the orders we're taking now are for beyond the 31st of March, so the stamp duty holiday it's gone, that's it, they're not going to get it, and nor is anybody down the chain. I mean, with the delays on searches and everything else, your chances of completing anything in under 3 or 4 months now are almost nil. And mortgage availability is now at 90%, there are now quite a few people offering that. And of course, rates are now starting to improve as well, because, you know, they've partly restricted the market through mortgage rates. So as a consequence of that, you'll see that the cancellation rate in the first 6 weeks actually dropped to 14%, which is only 1% above the same time last year. So, you know, we're virtually at normal levels of cancellation rates now, and I would suspect by June we'll be back at normal levels.
Yep, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brijesh Siya from HSBC. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is on the sales rate. In the new year, you talked about the sales rate being impacted by lower availability as well as the high comparable base. Would you be able to split that out and say how much was kind of depressed just because you didn't have stocks to sell? And the second one is on the build cost. You guide 2-3%. Is there any impact on the labor market just because of Brexit? I understand you did say there's not much, but have you seen any movement in labor especially?
Yeah.
So, Bridget, in terms of the sales rate, I mean, clearly, we don't actually have statistics on what sales we lose because we haven't got availability. We know that that's an issue. Obviously, in our discussions with our sales teams every week, but there isn't a specific amount we could put attached to that. I think what I would say is that whilst the sales rate at 0.67 is slightly down on last year when we had the Boris bounce, that 0.67 sales rate is identical to weeks 1 to 6 of the first half in the calendar year before that. So it really is a normal sales rate. So we, you know, we are comfortable with that. So you can see if we did have a bit more availability, you know, we would have even better sales. So whilst I can't quantify it, I think it's something to be very positive about. And I think I'll let Matthew talk about build costs.
Build costs, I mean, we're not seeing any major impacts. I mean, clearly you've got some in reports with regards to, you know, the likes of timbers going up, and that's mainly because of the international market more than anything else. But, you know, we're not seeing any particularly, you know, issue with regards certainly on materials. In labour, again, we're not really seeing any particular problems with regards to Brexit. We are seeing, you know, labour at the moment is impacted slightly on the back of the factors. You know, people self-isolate. Clearly, you can't go to a building site if you have to self-isolate, or you've got the kids at home and things like that. So, you know, we're probably more impacted immediately on the back of COVID than anything else. But as I said, it's not anything, you know, anything material. But, you know, in terms of Brexit, no, we're not seeing any impact.
Thank you. And can I come back on the cladding part? Just a clarification. When you talk about 6 sites, is that all you have where you needed some kind of rectification? And does that include all the sites which you are currently building as well?
No. In fact, you know, if you talk about the certification EWS1 form, that's required on any building above 18 metres. And, of course, you know, more recently we've constructed a lot of buildings in London over 18 metres. But we have got the EWS1 forms in place on those. So the issue stems back to mainly to our legacy sites, which, as I say, we've got these half a dozen where we've had the EWS1 forms have not been issued, and further investigations were needed into the cladding and fire stopping and the likes. And it's those schemes that we've now been dealing with over the past couple of years or so. So we're pretty content that it's a legacy matter, principally relating to these half a dozen sites built by main contractors anywhere between 10 and 20 years ago.
Got you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Aynsley Lemon from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead when you're ready.
All right, thanks. Not many left, actually. Just first of all, on the dividend, obviously reinstates at the interim level. Just if you could remind us of your policy going forward for the full year. I think, was it progressive, kind of 3x cover, but any reminding on that? And then just on the previous question, I think your Brexit kind of questions more related to the labour market. We've heard a few rumblings around kind of port issues, container rates, etc., just impacting some of the materials or products coming in. Have you seen or expect to see anything in that context? Thanks.
Well, I'll let Barbara answer the dividend issue, but it's very quick on the Brexit one. No, we're not. You know, we are seeing a little bit of I think you've got a few materials with a few spikes and then a few issues with COVID in the Italian appliance factories, but ultimately, no, we're not seeing any imports. I mean, it's the great thing about house building, you know, it relies heavily on the UK manufacturing. You know, it doesn't rely heavily on imports from abroad. I'll let Barbara answer the dividend question.
Just on that, though, Ainsley, I think we have covered this before. We carry a sensitivity sheet on this with all of our suppliers, where we constantly update with them where they sit with Brexit, and of course, you know, a lot of them made alternative arrangements to get materials in from non-EU countries, and that's been unaffected.
Yeah. So Ainsley, I think in terms of dividends, our policy remains unchanged at 3x cover that was set a few years ago. I think as far as 2021 is concerned, you know, based on the consensus, we could probably pay marginally more than 6p, but you know, given market uncertainty and our spending in the land market, we paid the interim that we have, and we'll review that when we get to September. We're happy with the dividend, but the cover policy hasn't changed.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marcus Cole from Liberum. Marcus, please go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, hi, morning all. Hope you're well. Just a couple of sort of finer questions, if I may. The first is just, can you add any colour to sort of the strength of the order book? How far forward are you selling, and are you able to push any prices? And then just what size of land bank are you comfortable operating with in the future as you look to grow?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of order book, you know, we're selling well beyond, you know, the key thing here is we're selling well beyond that March date, and, you know, and it's not costing us to sell beyond that March date, but, you know, we are selling into next year as well now. You know, we're 95% sold for this year, and clearly, you know, anything else on top of that's going to be into next year, and we're continuing to sell well. So, you know, we are selling well beyond, you know, those periods. I mean, in terms of land bank, you know, I'd love to have a lot shorter land bank, but, you know, planning is always going to be an issue with us. We try and keep our four years at least as our target. If we can get to a point where, you know, the planning becomes a lot more easier and a lot more reliable, well, we can bring that down. But, you know, at the moment, we'll maintain our level about 4 years.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Clyde Lewis from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Good morning, all. I think I've got a few, if I may. One was on sort of delays. I mean, you've covered some of the issues on delays, but could you say a little bit about where things are on the planning side and local councils in particular, I suppose, getting sites through planning and, you know, obviously not just outlined, but getting the detail done and whether that has sort of got back to more normal levels. And the other one sort of on delays, I suppose, or build rates was, you know, where do you think your current sort of construction levels are relative to, say, a 2019 base? Are you back at 100% on that level? And the other one I had really was around sort of product differentiation, and you've obviously sort of pushed more in terms of the family orientation, you know, and the bigger units over the last, you know, sort of 12, 18 months, I suppose, it's been coming for a while. But how have you noticed a particular difference in terms of the sales rate between that product and the smaller units?
Okay, a few there, Clyde, as usual. Thank you very much for all that. My book. With regards to outlets and planning, you know, planning's always... Unfortunately for us, it's a lottery with regards to whether your planning application is going to go through smoothly and quickly or not. And this is the problem we find. I mean, I got planning last week on a site that took 51 weeks in planning, and it was not a controversial scheme at all. Yet you get many of them through, in the period in the 13 weeks. So, you know, it's still down to local authorities and how good they are and what they're dealing with. You know, so there is no tangible reason as to why some are delayed and some aren't. So, you know, continues to be a huge frustration with it to get these through. They're asking for more and more from us. Every time we put a planning application in, there seems to be more consultation, more issues. You know, and now we've got other issues coming, you know, like the likes of nitrates and things like that, which come out of the woodwork. So, you know, it's certainly not getting easier. It's certainly getting harder. I think, unfortunately, you know, I can never tell you exactly which one will be the quick one and which one will be the slow one. So, you know, it's still tough to get planning through. And, you know, it hasn't been helped by the fact of many people having to work from home and the likes. So there's still issues around there. With regards to construction levels, you know, we are down on construction levels, which we were hoping to get them back. When we first came back, you know, we were at a reasonable level, and we expect that, you know, COVID was, as people settled into the style of COVID, as, you know, working a bit more remotely, that they could, you know, we'd increase them. But what we've noticed more probably in the third lockdown than anything else is the fact of our workforce is probably been more affected this time round, with the likes of people who are shielding, people who are self-isolating, you know, people who've got kids at home. You know, that's the new one. And, you know, people, if you're in a partnership with somebody who has to go to the office or works in a hospital or something like that, or nurse or anything, you know, you know which one's going to end up staying at home. So we are seeing a lot more of the workforce having to stay at home, which is, you know, having an effect. So that is somewhat of a problem. We're hoping as the vaccine gets rolled out, we will get that better as we go forward. In terms of product differentiation, you know, we tend to, our homes are, you know, I'd like to think that we've probably got the right home for the right, exactly the right time at the moment. People want exactly what we've got. You know, we tend to build a four-bedroom detached home with a bit of space around it, well-designed, you know, so it's not just the home itself. It's what we put around it as well, and, you know, and how we do the environment around it. And so I think that's playing dividends for us, realistically, as people are, you know, shifting around the country as to what they've got. And we are seeing people move further afield than they ever have done before, which is probably to be expected as people do less and less of the, you know, the daily commute now. It's turning into, you know, even if the pandemic was over tomorrow, it'll probably turn into a weekly commute rather than a daily commute. So, you know, I'm confident that, you know, we can sell very well. And, you know, if we had a lot more availability and we could drive things, you know, more, I think we'd sell out, the sales rate would be up even further.
Okay, I think thank you. And one last one from me. I mean, just in terms of the sort of the land that you're looking at, in terms of, I suppose, size of the sites and geographical location, have you changed much in terms of sort of what you're currently looking for?
Well, I think a red row site is always a red row site. You know, we've got to be in a location. I mean, our products, as you know, it's more, I'd say, desirable, more aesthetically pleasing, and therefore people have got to, you know, there's a cost associated with that, and therefore people, you know, need to pay towards that, and therefore you've got to have some element of discerning. You can't be somebody who's absolutely stretching themselves to buy a home. You know, they can't afford to be that more discerning on what they buy, you know. So we tend to always have to buy sites where we know there's an opportunity for people to pay more money. So, you know, a good area in a reasonable town is always a good area. So we are concentrating on the south of the UK. That's a big area for us, you know, because, you know, the average selling price is a lot higher there, and therefore, you know, the sales price can be easily changed, you know, upped in comparison to some of the other areas. But, you know, our northern areas, we'll probably try and move a little bit bigger in some of the houses because, you know, affordability is less of a problem compared to that of the south. So, you know, we're quite happy at the moment that the land that we're buying is in areas where, you know, we can get our premium for our products and people are prepared to pay for it. So, you know, we're happy with the land market at the moment that we can work effectively within it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you have joined us online, please use the flag icon. We have another question registered from Ahmed Lemon from BAML. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's Arnaud Lehmann from Bank of America. Just one follow-up question from me. Could you please elaborate a little bit on your customer base? I mean, it's clear that the hospitality sector has been hurt by COVID-19, although that didn't seem to impact at all the demand environment for you guys. With Brexit coming, maybe having an impact on the manufacturing sector over time, and the end of furlough possibly in the next few months, would you expect, firstly at the macro level, a risk of rising unemployment, and if it's more coming from the manufacturing side of the economy, would you expect more of a negative impact on your potential customer base?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I mean, thanks for the question. Our customer base is, you know, it's, you've got to look at what's been affected in the economy, and which is, you know, entertainment, tourism, areas of that. And, you know, many of our customers are second-time movers. And, you know, they have an element of deposit, and they have an element of, you know, equity within their home. So our customer base is pretty strong. You know, these same people tend to have reasonable disposable incomes, and, you know, that disposable income at the moment is not being used because, you know, holidays are not available and restaurants aren't available and things like that. So, you know, you've got a sector of the economy which is people that we aim for, which is, you know, second time movers, who have an element of disposable income that's not being used at the moment. So you can see why people want to, you know, head towards a better home and a better way to live. So, you know, it's playing to Red Row's skill set and advantage as to what we do, that people are really upgrading into a Red Row home. So I think with that, our customer base is really not being affected at this precise moment. In terms of Brexit with rising unemployment, you know, I think when we reopen the economy, we'll see from that. But again, you know, the unemployment side tends to be more, you know, into a different, you know, customer set than our own. You know, it's the other thing is, you know, it's a lot of young people, which is why I put in my statement the fact that, you know, we are very, very keen to ensure that, you know, young people have that opportunity, and therefore we purposely went out and took 32 graduates on at a time when graduates aren't getting employment and employed 19 new people across our business to do our degree course and kept our trainee levels at 330 trainees across the business. So, you know, we find it very important as a business ourselves, but clearly we feel sorry for those that areas being affected. But, yeah, you know, it's Brexit. I mean, my view is that, you know, we'll, I think Brexit has happened and the business will continue to be very strong.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's Q&A session. Matthew, I hand back to you.
Thank you very much, everybody, for all your questions. Clearly, you know where we sit. We've got some great advantages as a business. We've got a product that's absolutely spot on for this market. And clearly, you know, you've got a UK that's changing its priorities, and you know we're clearly there to support that. Okay, thanks very much.